Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, still enjoying that wonderful winter in Iowa. It's like a Courier Knives painting, right? You get in the horse-drawn wagon, you put those baked potatoes in your pocket that Mom made on the open oven to keep your hands warm, right?
Yeah, yeah. Dude, you're just explaining my childhood.
Well, Karen, I just assumed it was a donkey-drawn carriage in your household.
Like, yeah. That's like the famous thing. Like, you wear bread bags on the outside of your socks so your socks don't get wet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So this week on Little House in the Prairie podcast, we're going to talk about shucking corn. Now, Cameron, Ravnica Allegiance is hit its full stride.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some impressions, both from the constructed and limited perspective. Then we're going to talk about these modern bans and lack of unbans. And then finish up with a little bit of video game talk. But I want to hear from you first, Cameron, because I think you've been hitting Standard a little bit. Like, I started playing Standard this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in your outlook with what's been going on.
Well, you know, I open up Arena, and I'm like all ready to brew. I have so many ideas for what I want to do. There's so many lists out there. And I go to, you know, my collection to see how many rare wild cards I have, and it's two. So it's kind of hard to build new decks when I refuse to put money into this. Whatever, there's a lot of reasons. But ending up just with blue-green Merfolk and just adding a couple of the new cards that have dropped and putting them into Simic Merfolk now, and just taking that through as many standard matches as I possibly can. And
are you doing still, that best of one ladder?
No. I'm just doing the traditional stuff, and it's working. It's working pretty well. I mean, I'm earning gold, which is good, and Merfolk is still kind of Merfolk. Like, the list that I'm running has a few tweaks. Good things to include, breeding pools. My goodness. The ability to just have a breeding pool is so helpful. So helpful. So, like, it's just working and synergizing in a lot of ways for Simic. I really like that. I can't remember. It's the one drop that has an adapt mechanic that allows you to loot every single time you put a +1/+1 counter on the Merfolk. Mm-hmm. That is really, really good. It just allows you to filter and discard lands when you don't need them or look for that. Like, I play Sleep, which is kind of like my Wrath effect, so I can just swarm the battlefield. Works pretty well. Yeah, so, like, there's just a couple, like, a little updates, but overall, Merfolk is doing its thing. I did play against a very interesting metagame. I would say overwhelmingly I've been playing against mono red. I've seen so much mono red. And it's weird to be playing a mono red deck against a mono red deck in standard where, like, I really have to worry. Like, I need to be running more spell pierces and that sort of thing because the Wizard's Lightning and Lightning Bolt and Shock and, like, all of these, like, burn spells that I feel like I'm playing modern in some ways where, mm-hmm. I mean, I could be at, like, 9 life. They have, like, one creature on the board, and I'm like, oh, I'm totally fine, and then I just lose because I don't have counter magic up, and they can just, like, bolt me and jumpstart and then bolt me again. You know, like, it's just kind of crazy how it's not, like, overwhelmingly good. I wouldn't say it's like dominating the deck. It's not dominating or anything like that. It's just something I have to keep my eyes on just because burn spells, right?
Yeah, it's also from a free-to-play perspective. That's what you're going to play, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because you don't need dual lands. Every other deck you look at is not just a few rare wild cards. It's all the rare wild cards, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It seems like even more than normal, people are incentivized to budget build mono red, which kind of mm-hmm. stinks.
Yeah, yeah. Some other decks I played against Mardu Aristocrats. I like this deck a lot. I just don't feel like it does a whole lot. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem to be going over the top the way that it wants to be. But I really like what it's trying to do. I like the afterlife mechanic and just pinging your, you know, sacrificing your creatures to ping me one damage at a time. It seems to work fairly well. It just isn't over the top. And then the last deck that I saw quite a bit of, surprisingly, I saw some Jeskai control, but Esper control. A lot of people are trying to play Esper control. I just don't know if the mana base is, it just seems to be way taxing, the mana base, with things like Kaya's Wrath and, like, Absorb, wanting to have the two blue and a white, the two black, the two white, and like, just those sorts of things. I felt like I was winning a lot because my opponent was mana screwed, where like I'm sure they had a Wrath in their hand. They just weren't able to cast it because they didn't have that isolated chapel that they needed or something like that. So I like the deck. I like what Shaheen Serrani's been doing with it. Some of the lists that I've seen on MTG Goldfish, I just feel like the mana base, the cards that you're trying to use just seems kind of wonky, a little taxing. So... overall, liking standard. I'm definitely going to get sick of this. I definitely need to be playing something other than Merfolk in the next couple of weeks.
Well, make a plan, man. So before we get off Merfolk, are you playing Hydroid Crassus in this deck, or is it just pure Merfolk?
It is pure Merfolk, but I definitely would like to... There's like some of those additional cards like Hydroid Crassus that I think would lend themselves pretty well to what you're trying to do.
So... I want to talk about RNA Limited first, because that's the thing I spent most of this week doing. And as time has gone by, I've liked it less. Now, let me explain. Because it's really hard for me to put my finger on why I'm finding this to be the case. But I'm finding the matches take way too long. Somebody out there is going to snarkily comment to me, well, you want best of three, and best of three takes a while. No, I feel like the matches are kind of grind-a-thons in the limited context. And I don't know if it's the way I'm playing. I doubt it, because typically I'm a very fast player. I think it's probably the format, but it also might be an arena. I feel like I'm running into people taking a lot of time, like using timeouts and stuff, which, fine, cool, good for them. But games are taking... Like, I had a match that took, like, an hour this morning in Limited.
That's unusual.
And my opponent, we were Orza versus Green-Red, Gruul, and he had 6 cards left in his deck when it was all done. Like, it just was a grind-a-thon, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I immediately kind of... I didn't finish nearly the quantity of matches I wanted to in the time I had this morning. So I was like, you know what? I'm playing Constructed. This is really bugging me. So I blew a bunch of gems on just straight packs. I felt more comfortable doing that because of the protections, the duplicate protections that they've started to add. And so I was like, okay, cool. You know what? Time to just suit up Esper. I looked at the best of one list that we're going to talk about later that was on MTG Goldfish. And this is an Esper list that plays Angel of Grace in it and some other... You know, it's clearly tuned to play against the mono red deck. I think I'm maining like 2 or 3 moments of craving. You know, it's like that. Mm-hmm. I played a couple matches. I didn't have any issues with the mana, but if I'm being super honest with you, I didn't play against mono red. I played against other stuff, right? Hmm. So a faster deck like mono red certainly is right now could definitely alter my perspective on that. But I had something like 6 gold wild cards, and it was like, okay, well, I already have the previous Esper mana base. I just have to get Hallowed Fountains, basically. So let's just do that, get my Kaya's Wrath, some number of them. I had some already. And I was like, okay, I have this deck, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like a very minimal investment. Jeskai would be a minimal investment for me, too, because I have those cards. But I, for some reason, Esper is speaking to me more. Mm-hmm. That being said, I just really need to dive more in. I wanted to give this limited format a try. And I did it for, you know, 6 drafts or something and enjoyed it. But as my... And usually I start out with a really poor winning percentage and I go up. Mm-hmm. I've found that's not the case in Arena. And I don't know what it is, My guess is that people understand how to draft the bots. Like, they're learning that element of it, and I'm not doing a very good job of that.
Interesting.
But again, that's just all kind of theoretical. Anyway, I like RNA Limited okay. I'm not, like, jazzed to play it anymore, and I'm ready to jump into this constructed. We'll get the results from SCG Indy this afternoon or this evening, and that's when we'll have the first major standard tournament and go, okay, these are the results, which is pretty exciting. So, Cameron, hey, as per the usual, cards got banned the day after we got done recording. So
classic
WotC. Let's get out of this and talk about some modern. All right, Cameron. So we got a modern band announcement, and this one, it's interesting. I'll say that because I feel like it was kind of the shortest putt. A lot of people felt like this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, Crack Clan Ironworks got banned. And, you know, you're the modern aficionado on this podcast. What do you think?
Sure. You know, like, I mean, it's obviously a very, very good card. It allowed you to do some very busted things. Like, I mean, more busted than you can do in other ways with modern. I still think, like, just with my sentiment, and I know they gave their reasoning for, like, how Ancient Stirrings isn't like Ponder or Preordain. It's, like, it's very limiting in what you can do. But it's not limiting in the sense of, like, what it can do for the decks that it's doing it for, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, in that sense, I just didn't understand their reasonings. And in my opinion, Ancient Stirrings should have been number one to go. But what do I know? Obviously, I don't know anything. But, yeah, Crack Clan Ironworks, sure, whatever. But, like, it's not the thing that I thought was Public Enemy number one in Modern.
So basically, I think no card is more emblematic of the disconnect between casual F&M Modern and professional level Modern.
Mm.
I have never, ever played against a KCI deck in paper. I have online before, but I've never played against one in paper. And I think it's because it's a complex, difficult deck to pilot. It's expensive. All these things. But in the Modern community, or I should say in the professional community, it's understood that this deck is busted, wide open, has an insane win percentage in the hands of certain pilots, and it's a very targeted ban, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you just don't run into this in more casual REL modern tournaments.
Right. Yeah.
And I would completely agree with you that, I mean, surprise, surprise, the logic behind the bans across the board, and granted, it's been a long period of time now. We've had Modern for a while, but it's super inconsistent. Like, Crack Clan Ironworks is the engine for the deck.
Mm-hmm.
They've never, outside of like Birthing Pod, right? Like, they haven't actually targeted. You could make the argument for Splinter Twin, but they're still like Kiki Jiki and all these other ways to accomplish that thing. But they've never just banned a deck out of a format. Usually, they've gone after some kind of an enabler. And, dude, on its face, Mox Opal and Ancient Stirrings are way above the power curve. Like, way above, based upon... And you could say, well, there's limiting factors. Cool. Cool, but you're still talking about a Mox.
in
a format where you're telling me my... Two mana guy to go get a Batterskull is too good, but they can have a Mox. I just want to make sure I understand this, and it's okay. They get a Mox, I can't have my creature. Okay.
Uh huh.
They can have dig five cards, find one. I can't have dig two cards in Preordain. We good?
Yeah.
And the idea that, okay, well, you know, Preordain doesn't limit your deck in the same way. We sure about that? We sure about that? Because you still have to play blue, right? And I just don't think... I think the logic of adding Preordain to the format reduces variety is completely ridiculous, because a lot of the decks are just going to go, see a Serum Visions, here comes Preordain, end.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and yeah, those decks get better. Storm would get a lot better with Preordain, but I think something like the control decks would just get marginally better.
Yeah.
Right? But it's not game-breaking. You know, Sultai would probably get a lot better with something like Preordain. So, you know, Rug, these kinds of things would get better. Rug aggro is kind of unplayable with Serum Visions,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the way that works in Legacy, your ability to brainstorm and ponder allows you to tempo your opponent while you're hitting them with a Delver and a Tarmogoyf. The reason mm-hmm. that deck cannot exist in Modern to the same effectiveness is because you are so behind the eight ball from the jump. You have no Force of Will, no Daze, and no ability to manipulate the top of your deck, right?
Nope.
And so I disagree with the logic. I'm glad KCI is gone. Like, whatever, fine. I don't want to watch it on coverage. I almost never watched it in person.
Yeah.
But again, I feel like this should 100% be Mox Opal. I just think it is crazy that we keep making apologies for that card. It enables terrible strategies. Why is Mox Opal allowed but not Chrome Mox?
Because of the one deck that has never had anything ever, ever, ever banned from it, right?
Affinity.
Dude. Yeah, because that is like going to be protected. I mean, Modern will die, and Affinity will have zero things ever affect it.
But the good news, Cameron, is the format is so ludicrous that Affinity isn't even that good. It's too slow.
Yeah.
Killing on turn four, whatever, man. Check out these arc-like phoenixes.
Yeah.
And by the way, so if we continue down this path of graveyard interaction being too good, you know, a lot of people pointed to Faithless Looting. I don't think we're there yet, but it's not crazy to me to think that could eventually happen. Mm-hmm. I mean,
maybe Faithless they can just ban the graveyard in Modern. I mean, like, what else do you do?
Well, I mean, something like Faithless Looting is, I'm brain farting. Careful Study, whatever that mm-hmm. card is in blue, that's a Legacy card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mox Opal, basically a freaking Vintage card. Ancient Stirrings is essentially a Legacy card, and they're just masquerading as Modern cards in this format, right? Mm-hmm. I would also argue that Lightning Bolt and Thoughtseize kind of exist in that territory too, where they are so far above the power curve of the format that you're doing just dumb things. But I mean, cool, maybe this will help Modern as a format. I don't buy it. And then this whole thing with Stoneforge Mystic, I mean, they tweeted out basically, we're not going to unban Stoneforge Mystic because, so this is Aaron Forsythe, but essentially he said something along the lines of, I want to quote him just to get it correct. Basically, blue-white control is the second most Modern GP top eights recently, so I don't know what metric that means. Mm-hmm. It's hard to justify a Stoneforge Mystic unbanned in that environment. And he says Jeskai control is the third most. So I just think that would increase the way that you would, the variety of those kinds of decks. And I also don't think Stoneforge Mystic has to be played in control. So I guess that would be my rebuttal is, I feel like it's fine within the power level and the confines of Modern.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you would necessarily, like when you put that in blue-white, the way blue-white works now, you would have to build two different decks. Just like mm-hmm. Miracles and Stoneblade are different in Legacy.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would become two things. I mean, what's your thoughts on that, man?
I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think it's just really easy to say, well, it's going to be a blue-white deck that obviously plays Stoneforge Mystic, and like that's your control deck. But, you know, like, looking at some of the control decks now, some don't even have like Snapcaster Mage in them. Like, I mean, that's where we're at right now with some of the Modern control decks, where it's like you're not running four of Snapcaster. And I think those types of decks would probably still do what they're doing and be just as good as they were without Stoneforge Mystic. Whereas I feel like then you would have maybe more of like your tempo type of deck with a Stoneforge deck. So yeah, it would be like a blue-white control-ish deck, but you're right. Two separate categories of blue-white, which, you know, can exist. So
yeah, because, I mean, blue-white's playing Terminus right now.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, Maybe they would be on a similar axis, but I just think it would be additive to the format, not subtract from it. You'd also probably be much more likely to have a Death and Taxes or Maverick variant in Modern. But I also think like the X factor in all this that nobody talks about is Jit's still banned. Like, Jit is the thing that gets you out of the situations in Legacy when you cast a Stoneforge. Yes, everybody jumps to Batterskull, and that's fabulous, but I feel like Jit is the thing that would put Stoneforge Mystic into a like a stratospheric set of capabilities, right? Yeah. But on their face with both banned, it's kind of like, whatever. And I think they would both be fine in this meta, but, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's our Modern bans. I know, somewhere over in the corner is the Birthing Pod people. Yes, we get it. You know, we know you could come back. It would be fine, whatever. They're probably not going to do it. Last thing I wanted to mention... Actually, let's tie these last two things together. So we saw the MTG Goldfish best of one ladder results. Mm-hmm. You're seeing some deck lists pop up through MTGO. Basically, we're getting a look at what Standard looks like. We'll have a better picture of that this afternoon. But this card, Wilderness Reclamation, has kind of popped up on people's radars as, okay, how problematic is this? Basically, it allows you to untap all your lands on your instep. And feels like a card from Urza's block. And it's we'll just say has caused some problems alongside Nexus of Fate, our whole buddy Nexus of Fate. But I just want your opinions on this this deck and this card, Cameron. We're looking at an article from Legit MTG, by the way, which is called Wilderness Reclamation is the best card in Standard.
It's a really good card, you know, and I think I was kind of like, when people were talking about it and hyping it up, I was like, cool, but like, what are you doing with being able to untap your lands, right? And I think the interesting thing is the way that they can stack on top of each other. That's correct, right?
Yes,
I haven't seen that done in effect, but the way that you can tap, untap, to then, you know, cast the card that I've seen it in, which I've only played against once and it didn't actually go off, was the Expansion Explosion card that, you know, you can cast whatever X to deal X damage to any target. So, cool. It definitely has potential. I'm still wondering, will we see something else that will totally take it over the top? Because, like, right now, yeah, it's good, but, like, I feel like just with some of the aggro decks and Standard and whatnot, and with control decks being able to just absorb it, it doesn't seem to be hugely problematic.
I think it looks like a whoopsie from the perspective of power level and the way it would interact with Nexus of Fate, and it's easy to see how that might be something that's missed. You know, when I look at the, so we're looking at the Arena Best of One stuff, which, by the way, every time I see Best of One, it's impossible for me not to read that as boy, you know?
Boy.
Boy. As for control, boy. can you tell we're in our 30s? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so look, this card seems to be not intended to be an engine for a deck. Right? I'll just put you that way. Whether we get to that point or not, I think, is a different question. It is something you can interact with because they do have, like, if they just slam it on turn four, it is more than possible for you to just have a thing to get rid of it, right? Teferi can still tuck it. Like, there's all these, like, random things that can happen to it. So I'm not worried, but the unhealthy experience, or I shouldn't say, the experience of losing to something that's so degenerate and unhealthy like that, especially in a best of one in a boy setting, is probably really unpleasant, you know, because you're not losing for 2 seconds. You're losing for 10 minutes. And it's got to just feel soul crushing, right? Like people didn't like getting Fate Sealed by Jace. They're really not going to like getting Nexus of Fated on turn four or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, which, by the way, with Gross Spiral, theoretically, they can make this happen even faster. It gets a little nuts on that end. But you know what? We're looking at these results, and, you know, we're seeing Mono Red. We're seeing Bant. We're seeing Golgari. Like, it's really amazing how diverse the metagame is right now, and I just hope this continues to happen. I think mono red is the one that you have to have a plan for. Like, that's the one that, you know,
yes,
you should probably figure out what you're going to do. I was listening to the game podcast with Jerry Thompson and Brian Gottlieb, and they were talking about how the mono red makes mono blue better, because basically you can spell pierce and plan to tempo them, and, you know, spell pierce just has to be in that deck because that's how the tempo has to work, and it just gets so much better in a mono red mana or meta whenever you're able to counter certain things. But the Golgari deck has essentially just gone to bug because of the Hydroid Crassus, which how could it not? But yeah, it's a really, really cool meta right now. So I'm looking forward to playing it. I know you are too.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Cameron. So we've got some video games to talk about. I'm also going to talk about the new Conan series, which I didn't put in the show notes.
Yeah.
But we'll be right back after this. All right, Cameron, so talking some comic books and video games today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's lead off with you. What's been on Cameron's video game plate this week?
So this is like a nostalgia trip for a great number of people. For me, this is my first time really digging into a Resident Evil game. So
never played a Resident Evil?
Never. I mean, I've played... I think Resident Evil, yeah, dude, I know. Like, it was just something that was never, yeah, shocking, right?
The audience can't see my face. I am gobsmacked.
Yeah. I missed 4, I missed 6, you know, I missed them all. Like, it's just a thing that was never on my radar.
Maybe keep missing 6, but go ahead.
Okay, so 2, just downloaded it, put it in, or I'm sorry, turned it on, and about 15 minutes in, the graphics are great. Like, it looks like, I know it's like a complete remake. It's not like just, you know, 2 with like a new coat of paint on it. It's like a whole new engine behind it. But I'm excited, especially in the context of playing certain things now, like Prey 2. What was the one that we both played last year?
It was the second Prey.
Yeah. Things like Last of Us, you know, like the survival horror genre is something that is really new to me. Like, I would say most of my experience has been within like the last 4 to 5 years ago. So playing something like this, I don't know, like I'm looking forward to it. And because there's such a... reverence for this, I'm excited. So anyway, I'll have like a better review later, but like right now I'm just super stoked to be playing it. It looks awesome. And I kind of like just how stripped back it is compared to some of the other survival horror games I've seen in the past where, yeah, I don't really need that, you know, make it kind of like a small horror movie in a lot of ways. And I think it'll be more effective. So looking forward to it.
Wow. So I played the demo for about 20 minutes, and it knocked my socks off. I thought it was great. So, funny story. I actually have kind of a history with specifically that Resident Evil. But former co-host of the show, Dustin, and I... So, Resident Evil 2 came with 2 discs. 1 disc, you could start as the male protagonist. Mm-hmm. Is it Chris or Leon? I always get that messed up. And then Claire is the girl, I'm pretty sure. So, anyway... You play through the campaign through one character, and then you can play through the campaign with the other character, and there's certain things that change because you're playing. So you actually want to go through the game twice, and I don't know if they've kept that in the remake or not. Did you choose a character or anything like that?
Selected the guy, so...
Yeah, so anyway, they have a slightly different narrative, but I believe there's moments that happen in similar fashions, but whatever. So he played through one disc, I played through the other disc, and then we traded them. And this would have been like, you know, when I was a freshman or sophomore or something. So, dude, that game was a really big deal at the time. I think if they were to just put a new coat of paint on Resident Evil 2, it probably would have aged horribly. They did the fixed camera position, but your controller was not relative. So forward, it was always forward for where the character was and stuff like that. And the first three Resident Evils are like that. But they were, at the time, incredible. And I'm really glad that they're doing it justice. And Capcom, so I haven't played the most recent Resident Evil because it's like a first-person, like, deep horror game. And I just need to, you know, basically put myself together enough to play it in VR because it's a VR game.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, man. No.
But if I may, so you can skip Resident Evil 1. Even the remake was not very good that they put out on PS4. 3 is also one you can skip. Code Veronica, I have some nostalgia for. That was the Dreamcast one. It's pretty good. But, dude, you should 100% play Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil 5.
Okay.
I think I would be stunned if they don't come to Switch at some point because they just, especially Resident Evil 4, they just put on everything. But they are fantastic third-person action adventure games. And yes. Play those games. Six,
cool.
No.
Excited.
Yeah, I really, really, really want to play RE2 soon. So first thing I'm going to talk about is this hot new game, Cameron, called Skyrim.
Ooh.
So this is the fourth time I've tried to play Skyrim. Tried to play it on PS3.
Try.
Tried to play it on PS4. Tried to play it on Switch. I got the furthest on Switch. And then I decided to try it on PSVR. Okay? Which is not a mode that comes with Skyrim on PS4. You have to buy a separate VR edition. Okay? And the bad news is it looks like Skyrim on PS3 when you have the headset on, right? Like, I think it has to run in each eye at like 60 to 90 frames a second in VR. So you're really taxing your system. And apparently they've done a lot of work to make it play and look better since it originally was released. But yeah, you're not looking at great draw distances. You're not looking at great texture quality. But Cameron, I'm telling you, the Bethesda stuff, when you are physically in it,
immersed that way, yeah,
it makes all the difference. I'm stunned at how much more rich my experience is. So I'm just playing seated with a controller. You could also play standing, walking around, swinging your sword and all that. I don't know how well that works. Yeah. But I'm just playing seated. And here's the way I could illustrate it, because I think... I should say I have a problematic relationship with Bethesda games. I think the storyline structure usually stinks, and I think the worlds are usually great.
Absolutely.
I think they actually encourage you to not care about the storyline, and sometimes that's just ridiculous to me. My favorite game by them, not even close, is Fallout 3. I loved Fallout 3. I probably played 20, 30 hours of it before I got burnt out. But Skyrim... Here's how I can illustrate the difference. When I'm talking to a quest giver, when I was playing on Switch, I was jumping around their house. I was looking through their cupboard. I was doing whatever. But when I'm in the VR, I'm standing there looking at the person.
Huh.
Right? And then I'm looking at my surroundings. And when you're in one of those dungeons, like the first like little mini dungeon you fight, there's like a spider.
Yep.
I actually jumped, Cameron.
That's awesome.
I actually jumped in my seat. Like, and something I knew was going to happen, but the power of being able to look around in these places and actually feel the world that they built, the whole thing about you being able to wander around fits better. And yeah, it looks like garbage on a PS4. I know this is on PC, and supposedly the PC VR version looks pristine and amazing.
Sure. Probably.
But I mean, I want to go through all Bethesda games like this. If they were to release Oblivion, I don't care how it looks. Just put me in it, man. Let's go. Right?
It's true. Patrick Stewart and you, man. That's all. That's all you need.
Oh, dude. And it's also because I found that some of these PSVR games make me much more motion sick than a Vive. This one, they have fantastic settings to make sure that you don't get motion sick.
Nice.
And, yeah, so it's a great investment, and I'm going deeper into the game than I ever have, which is crazy. And last thing I'll say in terms of immersion, you haven't lived till you picked up a book in Skyrim and actually turned the pages.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah, like you just, and you look at things. So whenever you're checking a body, you just look with your head and then it'll tell you to search the body. So your head becomes kind of the mouse cursor, and it's amazing how much faster those things go.
I bet, yeah.
So anyway, last thing I want to mention was the new Conan series by Marvel. So I haven't done a comic book talk in a while, but this is Marvel had repurchased the rights just like they did with Star Wars. Well, not exactly just like they did with Star Wars. Disney owns Star Wars now. But Dark Horse used to have the license, and Kurt Busiek's Conan with Kerry Nord from like whatever that was, 2004, is still the best Conan comic book. Maybe some of the best Conan stories I've ever read. Gorgeous, wow. Beautiful, awesome stuff. And Conan, I think, is a kind of like James Bond, is a problematic fave of mine, right?
Sure.
I kind of acknowledge that there's this level of...
deep chauvinism. How about that?
Sure. And they've peeled back from that quite a bit with James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Over time. But Conan is still swinging swords. There's the damsel in distress. It's all those things. Mm-hmm. Right? And I'm going to tell you right now, Cameron. So just to put this out there, the writer is Jason Aaron. He's most known for his most recent run on Thor and Doctor Strange, but he did a Vertigo series called Scalped, which I loved. And the art is by Mahmoud Asrar, who I've not encountered before. Good artist, though.
Cool.
The first issue, I was like, ooh, I don't know that this is clicking. I don't know that this works. And it took me the second issue to kind of get what he's doing with it. But it's a age 12 plus version of Conan.
And
at first, I kind of balked at that because I feel like if you're going to do Conan, let's do Conan. You know, let's jump into the deep end of the pool. Let's lop dudes' heads off and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of not there. However, I really like the idea that Conan is this self-contained stories within a larger narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something the original author did really well, Robert E. Howard. And I think that's where we're going to head with Jason Aaron. So I would give this like a B, right? The first issue was like a C, and then the second issue was like a B+. It's far short of the brilliance of the early Dark Horse issues, but still well worth the money. All right. So if you're out there and you haven't read those Kurt Busiek Conans, especially like guys, the second issue, which was the Frost Giant's Daughter, I'm like clapping my hands. Read that comic.
Nice.
Find it, read it. It's great stuff. But this kind of satisfies that to a certain degree, right? Back when sword and sandals was and sorcery was a simple thing, right? We didn't have all this Game of Thrones politicking. There was an evil wizard. Yeah. There's a giant snake. There was Conan. Who you got to root for? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So, anyway, Cameron, if someone would like to message you in shock and awe that you've never played a Resident Evil game,
where would they find you? At @Cameron_McCoy.
And I'm @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMPG. We will check you guys next week.